The word social today is on many a lip. Social media, we know. Social distance, a blip. What's the likely reaction from the always oppressed? A human condition called social unrest. What a powerful last couple of weeks. Spectrum West, being about the arts and humanities, is very sensitive to things upsetting to the American apple cart. For the past 10 to 11 weeks, we've been talking Corona and COVID as if they're the only things wrong with America. Sorry to say, there's more. So let's all do our part to identify and rectify. Welcome to Spectrum West. It's good to have you as neighbors, and thanks for being in our audience. This week, Larry Heagle has made a living for decades making people chuckle as a music and comedy entertainer. He's a rather household name around here, and now your household can read all about many of the experiences he's had over his decades. We'll talk with Mr. Heagle about the book and more. Jim Oliver submits an absorbing conversation with Bunny Carlson, once a West Wisconsin girl, who wrote her book about growing up on a farm near Plum City. And what do you say we begin here, People have been doing many different things during quarantining and distancing. And if you know Dr. Catherine Schneider at all, you're not surprised she's soaking it all in, just because it's part of life as we know it. Even though life as she knows it is a tad different than most. She's never been defined by her disability, lifelong blindness. She's also rarely stymied by it, and I don't think would ever use it as an excuse. As a clinical psychologist and educator for 3+ decades at UW-Eau Claire, she knows her way around, and she's sharing her way around, affected as we all are, and yet differently by the coronavirus. Among other places, she writes weekly at the Chippewa Valley Post website, and it was those placements that prompted the following phone call. Well, let's work to imagine what your world is like, and then we'll take it a step further and try to imagine that world during this crazy time in our lives. You've been blind since birth. That's a phrase that explains that you have a lot of experience at it, but I tend to think that it's your endless energy and confident spirit that drives your abilities rather than just a knowing your way around the block, literally and figuratively. So again, along the lines of imagining what your world is like, the term screen reader comes up for people who don't know what that is. Tell us about that.
The way I access the internet or my email or anything on my desktop computer, I have a program called a screen reader, which reads everything out loud that's on the page. Huh. So it starts in the upper left-hand corner and just babbles till it gets to the bottom right. For people's experience, they have iPhones or other devices like that. You can turn on something called VoiceOver, and that will give you the experience, because as you drag your fingers around the screen, it will read everything that's under your finger, and that's kind of like what my reading experience is, or that is exactly what my reading experience is when I use my iPhone.
Sure. As with an iPhone, are you able to pick the voice on screen reader?
You can have different choices, but I don't care, because my emphasis is on getting as much information as possible into my ears.
Sure.
Because even a simple web page might have 250 links on it. And if you don't want to spend all day on one simple web page, you got to get it quick. So I really don't care if it's a cool English guy with an accent or what it is.
So in screen reader, I'm trying to imagine it, what happens when you come across a link? How would you click the link?
By using the Enter key. I can't point and click, and I can't use a mouse, so everything's done with keyboard commands.
I see. Now, the reason we're talking, other than the fact that you're such an interesting person to talk to, and I should talk to you more often, is that you are a regular on a website called the Chippewa Valley Post, which labels itself as community-supported journalism. The Corona Chronicles, dispatches from the sidelines, and they're very enjoyable reading. They're succinct, and they're often fun. One of your dispatches from the sidelines talks about hobbies. You did not have many growing up because you had so much to do, but there is an enjoyment of games and puzzles and things, playing bridge, Scrabble. There are either versions commercially available for visually impaired individuals, or friends have jerry-rigged some to make them accessible. So you're making up for not having early hobbies with some later ones.
That's the advantage of retirement. You can explore new hobbies.
And you do.
The bridge is cut down a little bit since Corona came around.
Sure.
Now I play with one set of people, and we all have face masks on.
Let's talk about part of what I perceive to be a mission of yours, one that you're very good at. If there's one word that is most important to you, or one that you pursue in unrelenting fashion, it's the word access. Access to all of life's amenities for those with any kind of physical challenge. It's been a mission of yours in your writing and your speaking, maybe even your dreaming. Am I right there?
I thought you were going to say advocacy or access, and either one. Maybe advocacy of access, because I believe that the 20% of people who have disabilities need to be able to enjoy the good things of life. And sometimes that takes some tinkering with the good things of life so that they become accessible. And sometimes it takes people offering a hand to make things accessible, extra effort. You credited me with boundless energy, no, but stubborn.
Okay.
Stubborn makes up for not having boundless energy sometimes.
There you go.
I'm always looking for plan B and how are we going to make this work. And that's one reason I approached the editor about doing a column about Corona from the sidelines, because I think when situations change and people have to deal with, oh my goodness, how am I going to deal with this new situation I don't like? I think my 70 plus years of dealing with a disability mean that I do have some skills in doing some things like figuring out plan B, plan C, plan D that might be useful to people that don't happen to have a disability. So I wanted to put those out there, skills at your service, and just writing a straight up kind of a mental health post with all sorts of serious information didn't strike me as anything that anybody other than my best friends would read. So that's where trying to find humor. People like stories. I like stories anyway, and I assume other people do too, of how does the world look from a slightly different vantage point?
Yeah.
So that got me to approach the editor and say, how about if I write a column? Even when we're totally opened back up as far as we're going to be, I imagine that this column may get less frequent, but I imagine it'll keep on ticking for a while.
Dr. Catherine Schneider with us, Emeritus Psychology Professor, UW-Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley Post, community-supported journalism. She writes the Corona Chronicles, dispatches from the sidelines. Go to cvpost.org and you will enjoy yourself. I don't believe we have time to talk about all the things you've done, are doing, and want to do. And now you represent District 22 on the Eau Claire County Board. Why was that experience something that you decided to pursue?
Kind of the same reason that I believe that 20% of people with disabilities need to be at the table. Mm-hmm. As one of my friends who was a lobbyist once said, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And I love that because it's true. I think many people on the county board care deeply about serving people with disabilities, et cetera, but they don't have necessarily the lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, lived experience needs to be there. Experiences being on the Aging and Disability Resource Center board, a lot of contacts with people with varying disabilities, and I count on people to come to me with needs. I think sometimes having a disability makes people who have other disabilities more likely to come to you because they think, well, maybe you'll understand.
Sure.
So I've had opportunities already to advocate on several different points.
Did you pursue this representation on the county board with an agenda of any kind? Did you see things that you thought needed your kind of attention, or did you just figure you would once you were there?
I figured once I was there, I would see things. And sure enough, I did.
One of your CV post installments says that Safer at Home can give people a hint of what life with a disability is like. If we think about it, we might be able to see it, but since you live it, save us the energy. Explain.
Well, I think some of the things like transportation is an issue for me. My guide dog does not have a license to drive a car, so getting around.
Mm-hmm.
And now your experience, now that they're telling you don't go out and about, is kind of like my experience when I have trouble going out and about. So we see all sorts of things blooming, groceries getting delivered, et cetera, originally set up for people like me. For a while there, they got way overcrowded with the other 80% of folks who didn't need them, but now did need them.
Sure.
So there were great big long wait times to get your groceries delivered. Well, now y'all experience the same thing I experienced, which is you have to wait to get what you need. Another example would be the meetings that all of a sudden went to Zoom or WebEx or some other platform. People with disabilities have been asking for that forever, because some people have difficulty leaving their homes. Even before COVID, they wanted to be able to participate in all these wonderful things out there. Well, how about electronic participation? No, we can't do that. And now, because it was an emergency, turned out, yes, we could. It's not as good as being there in some ways. You miss the social chit-chat before and after, but meetings are happening and business is being done. And now I think the next step is going to be, can we keep that option?
True.
Even when we're not in emergency status, so that more people can be at the table?
The similarity, giving us a hint of what life is like with a disability, we are all having to find a way. And that's what people with disabilities have had to do forever.
Like all the creative things that people are doing now to celebrate graduations and weddings and all this stuff, you know, those aren't plan A. That's not the way you'd to do it.
What about social distancing? That has some relevance.
Social distancing is real difficult for blind people. Number one, you don't know how far you are mm-hmm. from somebody until they say something. And in the polite northern Midwest, people tend to smile behind their masks and not say anything. So I don't know where they are. And I also use where they are to kind of judge where I should be. Good social distancing etiquette would be if people would say, I'm passing on your right, by where the voice is coming from, I can judge where they are. And even better, if they have their best friend who has four legs with them, to say, I'm passing on the right with Fifi, so then I know what my dog is looking at, rather than just sort of wondering why suddenly my dog is fixated over to the right and I don't know what's going on. So please talk. Or another example of that, face masks with clear plastic in front enable deaf people who lip read to lip read. And it's just something that people don't think about until it affects them somehow.
Yeah, the advocacy is what you're very good at, so congratulations on that.
Well,
we're going to think about it. The more we talk to you, the more we'll think about it. And you know, our era has produced another friend. She's a friend of yours, I know, and her name is Alexa.
Yeah, originally, I would guess that was sort of aimed at people with disabilities, but now a friend of many.
Yeah, I've grown pretty close to her, but I try not to get too close.
You know? Social distance.
That's right.
Well, let me tell you one new way I'm using her. During Corona, I looked around for what can I do to help, and I came up with this column. And then I also came up with single people need somebody to check on them,
yep,
or might. So I developed a little group of people that I check in with once a day to make sure they're still around and ticking. The way I do that for most of them is by sending out an email, and I ask a question. Sometimes I run out of questions. So when you say good morning to the A lady, she tells you something that happened on that date. Miles Davis' birthday, so for that day I can say, do you like jazz? It's Miles Davis's birthday. So she gives me random information that I can make into a question. Instead of, are you still alive, ask him something fun.
Great idea. Dr. Catherine Schneider, the author of several books, including a children's book. She has a blog and columns on cvpost.org. The Corona Chronicles, Dispatches from the Sidelines. As I said, I have a sneaking suspicion Kathy and I should talk more often, and maybe we will. I hope we will.
There's another book coming out soon.
Ooh.
I hope I'm back to talk about that.
Well, I hope I get a copy of it.
And the book is called Hope of the Crow.
Hope of the Crow.
Yeah.
That's enough to make you want to read it. Nice title. Kathy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mr. Larry Heagle shares some thoughts on his new book. And next, Jim Oliver just finished reading one as well on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, a locally owned community bank now offering checking account options. Charter Bank is dedicated to being invested in the community, customers, and employees. More information is at charterbank.bank. Support also comes from UW River Falls, where professionals in STEM fields can transition to a teaching career in 1 year. Scholarships are available. More is at go.uwrf.edu/stemteach. Hey, Jim, can I have that book now that you're finished with it? Those were my words the other day after listening to Jim Oliver's conversation with the author of Farm Girl, and I dare say your reaction might be the same. Here's that conversation.
In my childhood, in an 80-acre farm in Mille Lacs County, Minnesota, back in the 1940s, I could see the flashing northern lights in the northern sky. And on one occasion, I watched from a distance as our Danish immigrant neighbor was chased up a thorn apple tree by the Holstein bull he was trying to chase back into his pasture. The bull had escaped into our pasture. And my father would sit out by the hour husking corn on a cold winter afternoon. And, oh yeah, there was, for me, shocking oats on a hot August afternoon. All that and more came back to me in recent days in the book Farm Girl, a Wisconsin memoir by Buna Bunny Colburn Carlson. It was published this spring by the University of Wisconsin Press. Bunny Carlson joins us by telephone from her home in Grand Rapids, Michigan, to talk about the book that describes her family's life on an 80-acre farm in Pierce County near Plum City, Wisconsin. Welcome to Spectrum West, and thank you for coming on with us.
Delighted. Nice to talk about the book, and nice to hear about your background.
Well, mine's nowhere near as interesting as yours, but anyway. What brought on this book?
Well, it has a rather interesting genesis. I signed up for a class on writing your own cookbook. Well, I thought I would write my mother's recipes, which were very important to me. And as I wrote them, I realized every recipe had a story that went with it. And eventually, the instructor in the class said, you know, the stories are better than the recipes. And why don't you just write the story? So I continued with that, and it was a joy to remember so many of the wonderful things about my parents and about growing up on that beautiful little farm. So the stories just continued to flow.
Well, that's great. This actual book, how long has it been in progress?
Well, probably 2 years.
Well, that didn't, compared to a lot of people, that's pretty fast.
Well, I had a lot of memories stored up so I could write them very easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about your parents and your siblings and how they got started in the farm near Plum City.
My mother finished her classes at the Eau Claire Normal School and became a teacher. So she taught in several of the one-room schools in Pepin County. She had jobs in three different schools over the years. And as was customary in those days, the teacher boarded and roomed with one of the families in the school district. So my mother, in her last school, boarded with Owen and Grace Metcalf. They introduced her to the handsome young bachelor, a successful farmer who lived near them. And from there on, it was pretty much history.
Uh-huh.
Dad farmed with his brother, and they shared a home in which my father and his brother had been born. But after Dad and Mother were married and were about to start a family, they had to be out on their own. Mother and Dad found a beautiful little 80-acre farm near Plum City in 1924 and started farming there. Sadly, that was at probably the peak of the farm prices, and they eventually were stuck with a large mortgage after the great crash of 1929. So that was not a really great start, although they were capable, happy young people, and they managed well on their farm.
Yeah, it's obviously in the undertone here is that they really had a tough go of it. But
yes.
Yet everybody seemed to be very happy and got along pretty well, pretty successful on the farm. They seemed to be very careful with their money. They didn't throw their money around. You write something about money was tight, so the car was put away for the winter. You want to talk about
exactly
that a little?
Right.
How did you get around?
Well, Dad had a nice team of horses, and he had a good sleigh, and we had a wagon, and we didn't do a lot of traveling. We didn't run to town for a spool of thread, a bag of potatoes or whatever. We managed with what we had.
Well, you talk about the chores on the farm. You all had jobs, the way it sounded. What sort of stuff did you have to do?
Well, whatever we were told to do. One of my jobs was gathering eggs from the chicken coop when I was a youngster. Later on, both my sister and I helped with the milking. We helped my mother in the kitchen. We helped with picking berries. We could drive the horses on the hay wagon. We could help with shocking grain. Lots of jobs. We were tough kids, and our parents were tough, and we did it.
Mm-hmm. Talk about life during the Great Depression, and particularly the droughts and the hot weather and all of that stuff. Oh. What was life? I missed a lot of that, but it was still kind of tough going when I became aware of what was happening around my parents. How did you get around, the dryness for the crops that you had to try and grow under those conditions?
Well, I can remember my father just shaking his head, looking at the short grain and saying, it's not going to be worth much. Everything dried up. The grass was crisp and dry and brown. The hay grew only inches tall. The corn leaves withered in the sun. They curled as they tried to conserve their moisture. It was very grim. It was grim. Mm-hmm. But there was never any feeling of, oh, we're victims of this. We just can't go on. They went on. They did the best they could with what they had. The book should be considered a tribute to my mother and dad, to the farmers and the farm wives who made the best of it during that awful time, more than a memoir of my childhood. It really is a tribute to them.
She is Bunny Colburn Carlson, who is the author of Farm Girl, a Wisconsin memoir. Well, getting back to the drought and the horrible weather during the 30s, that was famous for the Dust Bowl. How about your cattle? Were you able to maintain your herd during that time?
We did keep about a dozen cattle, milking cows. They didn't like it very well. They nibbled the grass where they could find it. And sometimes at night, we could hear them bawling late in the evening because it was so unfair to be hungry. Sometimes Dad cut down the bottom branches of basswood trees, and they would eat the leaves. Mm. We were able to buy some hay from the farmers in the valley nearby, and that supplemented what the farm was able to produce. It was not easy, but it was not a terribly unhappy time. It was, of course, the Dirty 30s. The Dust Bowl was officially a little bit western Wisconsin. Western Wisconsin was very dry, but it was not officially Dust Bowl. We were able to pump water from the deep well, so the cattle were never thirsty. We always had water. And there were some crops. The worst of it was probably around 1936-37, when it was just totally dry.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to your educational experience. This is always a good one because you walked to school every morning and night, uphill both ways.
Exactly.
Which is, of course, a fairly common phrase amongst us farmers. You went to school in Plum City? Is that where the school was?
That is correct, yes. Uh-huh. We lived about 2.5 miles from school, which was too close to be allowed to ride the buses. Mm. They did have school buses when I was in high school, but 2.5 miles was considered a perfect distance for kids to walk.
Keep you in good shape. Huh?
Right. But I do remember some of the long walks to school in the spring. The clay roads, they sucked the boots off the kids.
I can understand that. We look outside in the wintertime and hope that the roads were closed and we didn't have school that day.
Well, that happened too, yes. Mm-hmm. But sometimes Dad would hitch up the horses and take us to school in the sleigh. Only if it was extremely cold, as it often was. I think I wrote about one time when I walked to school, and it was 27 degrees below zero, but I didn't know that until I got to Plum City.
Mm. What you didn't know didn't hurt you, I guess.
Well, no. But it was a beautiful walk to school. The hill at the top of which we lived was a beautiful, beautiful walk. Flowers in the spring, beautiful color in the fall, even pretty in the winter. Mm. And, of course, Plum City was a pretty little town.
You played in the band.
Well, actually, I started playing in the band when I was probably in seventh grade, and they let me play in the high school band because they just didn't have enough people. Mm. So they would accept a little seventh grader.
What did you play?
I played a trombone.
Oh. Now, the infamous Armistice Day blizzard had an impact on your band.
Oh, yes. We played for the dedication of a new bridge over the Chippewa River in Durand. We started out on a fairly pleasant day. The temperature dropped rapidly. Well, you know the story of the Armistice Day blizzard when hundreds of people were marooned, many died. Mm-hmm. Our band played, and then we went into the warming hut, but the slide on my trombone froze. I remember that vividly. We got home safely, but a lot of other people did not make it home safely that night. Duck hunters were caught on the Mississippi River, unable to get to shore. Many people in their cars were marooned on the roads and snowed in, unable to get to shelter.
One final thing I'd like to talk about. You wrote about the farmers working together, you know, a strong thing where I was growing up. Everybody kind of worked together. You had a rather substantial party line, as I remember, a number of people. We had an 18-party line at our place.
Oh, my.
And that was fun to, you know, it was entertainment for the phone rang. Anyway, I remember one time we had a rather large swamp on our property. My dad was off thrashing somewhere, and they'd all exchange work on thrashing days. So I wasn't very old. I don't think I'd started school yet. My mother and I were home alone. I was an only child. And all of a sudden, fire is coming across the swamp heading for our buildings. And some excitement for a minute, and then they had an emergency number to call on that phone line, and all of a sudden the whole neighborhood was there. Our parking lot was full of cars, and it was an introduction to, you know, people working together for a variety of reasons. You write about that a lot.
Yes. The neighbors were very helpful, very kind to each other, ready to help each other in an emergency of any kind. We had neighbors across the road, elderly, and they were very, very special to us kids. We were allowed to call Mr. and Mrs. Olson Grandpa and Grandma. Mm-hmm. They were really gentle Swedish immigrants. Their children farmed after Grandpa Olson was no longer able to manage the work. It was a good neighborhood.
Well, the book is Farm Girl, a Wisconsin memoir. We've been talking to the author, Bunny Colburn Carlson. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and best wishes on the book.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it, and I've enjoyed talking with you.
This spellbinding book, The Farm Girl, or not The Farm Girl, recently released through University of Wisconsin Press. I'm diving into it. Stick around, Larry Heagle's here in a moment with some music in the background from his new book. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process for almost 50 years with welcoming facilities and personalized service. Details are at marquardttoyota.com. Well, if you live in western Wisconsin and you've done so for, let's say the last 30 years or so, you've seen Larry Heagle perform somewhere, or at the very least, you've heard his name while people rattle off some of their favorites. Larry Heagle put together a stage act at a young age and rode that shtick to the big time and back, and Larry Heagle remembers much of it, the people and the places, in a new book that's titled Not Really Sane, Not Really Sorry. Welcome to the Slim Whitman of comedy.
Oh.
That's in your book, man. I like giving people hors d'oeuvres, and here are two from the book, a word and a phrase. Turtles and you have really nice hands.
Oh.
And that should That should do it, folks. Read the book and you'll get it. Thank you, Larry, for being with us. We appreciate it.
That one you started out with about the Slim Whitman of comedy, that was not exactly a compliment.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's why I said it.
She ended up writing for Jon Stewart. I guess she knows what she's talking about, but she took an instant dislike to me. Lisbon said we're talking about. That's how she introduced me the second night. Well, here he is, the Slim Whitman of comedy.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up is because your book, the cover and parts of it, you know, there's a little self-deprecation in there, especially on the back cover. You're having fun with it.
Yeah, well, that's the whole idea. You can't take life too seriously or you're in trouble.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning. Farm kid. Then you took a step toward the priesthood, but left that for others, including a brother of yours, to manage. You went on to be an English teacher for a while anyway, and you quit before you snapped. Through most of those things, there was the call of the stage. When, during all that stuff, did little Larry realize that he just could not satisfy that itch in any other way other than scratching it?
Well, it was kind of a combination of burnout from teaching what's now called middle school, then called junior high school. It was a junior high school burnout, and it was the fact that I was doing either summer theater or performing music and comedy every summer. It was not that hard of a leap to make to the other side. That's how it happened. So I think I said in the book also that Paul Gerke, my principal, called me and said, you weren't very good this year. I said, yeah, I know. That's why I'm quitting.
I'm intrigued by Larry, the teacher. Was humor part of your teaching act?
I think if you asked, you would invariably get the answer yes. They liked me because I used, again, Paul Gerke frowned on that. He'd hear laughter and think there was no teaching going on whatsoever. Stick his head in the door once in a while. But as I recall, eighth graders have an attention deficiency. If you go longer than 5 minutes with a straight topic, you lose them. I can remember one day talking about whatever it was, adverbs or whatever it was. All of a sudden, a hand went up. And I went, oh, good, somebody's got a question.
Yeah, where'd you get that tie?
Okay. Time for him to get on the roof with a high-powered rifle.
Which you mention in the book. You know, there is a timeliness to this book because it's full of dozens and dozens of experiences, most of them humorous, some are tougher. And here you are handing out copies of that book of experiences in a time we're all going to remember for its unique effect on our lives. I suppose for you personally, it's better to happen now than when you were busy all the time entertaining people because you would not be entertaining people.
That's right. I would, yeah. My life would be very different if I was now 21 years old and looking for some career in entertainment. I feel very badly for the people who are entertainers at this point because now they've got to rely on doing things like videos. And, hell, I don't even know how to do that. So, but what I've been doing, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned it in the book or not, to scratch that itch lately, I've begun doing what I call safe distancing. Many concerts, and I will sit down with four or five people that are 8 to 10 feet away from me, and I don't need a PA system. I just put up my stool and get my guitar, and I'll do 15, 20 minutes. And if it's going well and we're having fun, I'll do it more than that because I get as much out of it as an audience. One of the things that's always kept me going, I've done a lot of big-time stuff, opening act stuff, until COVID came along. I was enjoying playing in nursing homes and senior centers much more than opening for Tammy Wynette, for instance, because I can feel the love coming back from 12 people who are starving for live entertainment. And some of them, okay, they may have dementia, but you start singing songs, and I don't care how bad they are. The lights go on, and their lips start moving, and I've had some people start singing out loud, and I love that when it happens. It just gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's good to hear. On the phone with Larry Heagle, we're talking about his new book, Not Really Sane, Not Really Sorry, Tales of an Itinerant Performer. I finished it over the weekend. You know it's a good book, and you know you're enjoying it when you get to the end and say, I wish there were more, you know?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Good for you. And I should point out that among many things that this book has, it also has a bit of medical intrigue, traumatic orchitis.
Yes.
I think people should, we're not going to talk about it, but I think people should just go look that up, okay?
Yeah, they can look that one up on their medical dictionary.
Yep. And the men should be very careful as they look it up, because they may have a reaction of some sorts.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of detail in the book, Larry. You say that you traveled with a little notepad to help gather performance material, but I can't imagine all of this just coming from this wonderful memory of yours. Did that notepad help you? Did you keep a journal, a diary? What happened?
Here's the deal. I did not keep a journal, but I had to put in quarterlies for taxes. So I got myself one of those regular 8x11 binders, and everywhere I went, I would write down where I was going, what I was going to be doing, and then every time I stopped for fuel, I would get a slip, and I would tape it to that page. And after a while, that would be a really fat notebook, and then I went back over through a lot of those just to remind myself of where I'd been and what I'd done. So that was like a log, like a journal.
Yeah, it turned out to be priceless. It
really helped.
So yep. you were part of the folk music craze of the early 60s, the Freedom Singers I was reading about. So if you were part of a group or two, how did you determine that you were destined to be a solo act? When did you make that decision?
That was sort of made for me because the first group I was ever in was, I don't remember if I mentioned it in the book, was called the Notable Four. We were a barbershop quartet. And that's about as square as you can be. we had little plastic notes sewed to our shirts, and they were kind of Kingston Trio-ish shirts.
Ooh.
So that was my first foray, and we might have made $15 a piece doing barbershop quartets, and we couldn't compete because we had instruments. And of course, you can't have instruments and be an authentic barbershopper. But then I got into the Freedom Singers, and there was the New Freedom Singers when we lost our bass player who went on to law school. And then Robert Johnson, One Man Johnson, mm-hmm. he decided folk music was passé. I'll never forget the day he broke the news to me that he was starting up a new band with Chuck Silberg. They were called the Last Fair Deal. They were going to do a lot of James Brown. He said, No, I don't mean the football player.
Wow.
Oh, really? So, anyway. That's kind of put me on my own because he left, and then I kind of fumbled around with here and there, and then I just thought, well, I can do this on my own. That's how that started.
How did the association between Larry Heagle and pizza come along? Because you've done many shows that feature the act and the pizza.
My first trip to Italy, Father John, my brother, was studying canon law in Rome, and we went to Rome. I got my first taste of authentic Italian pizza, Napoli-style pizza, which is basically what we call pizza margherita, basically just a sauce and fresh tomatoes and buffalo mozzarella cheese. And I swore to myself, when you get home, you're going to learn how to make pizza. Of course, the first 6 months, I had quite a few disasters. But I wish I kept track of all the pizza I've made since then, because it's got to be in the 10,000s or so. I've done a lot of pizza parties and only had one bad experience in a pizza party, and that was not my fault. That was a family that just hated one another and they were sniping at each other.
So they ended up throwing pizza at each other.
Just about cursing at each other anyway.
Yeah.
But the rest of them were just really, really fun.
And I can vouch for how good those parties are because I hosted one. You were at my home, and it was fun. I even had my parents there. They drove 150 miles to come over for that baby, and they were happy they did. No longer around, and I'm sure they're still talking about it. They had a wonderful time, laughing along with everybody else. Let's talk about the vasectomy song, because it gets a lot of mention in the book. It's a song that you wrote as only a whippersnapper.
Yeah, 1979, yeah. 3 years after I quit teaching, and I think that has something to do with it.
Well, you wrote it long before anybody chronologically considers that procedure. So where did that song come from?
Well, it just popped into my head one day, and I took it from there. That whole thing about the orange, all juice, no seed, I found that somewhere first, and I think that was my kernel, my nugget to start with, and I went from there. But it was a time when I was separated from my first wife, and the whole business about I can't pay the rent, the truck's got a dent, that was all kind of the truth. Songs like that, fortunately for me, just kind of simmer somewhere inside of my sick brain, and then one day they pop out. The Woodtick song, which I think is the best of my novelty songs, that came out full blown. I wrote it down in half an hour, six verses, it just poured out of me.
Ticks are parasites, creepy and small. Scourge of the Northwood, spring through fall. Your step is light, you never know they're there. Till they pitch a tent in your underwear. Look at that moon, it's a beautiful sight. Don't share your body with a parasite. Let's get naked, it's a safe thing to do. You check me, I'll check you. For wood ticks. Well, you might have been fishing or leaning on a tree. That's when I find them crawling on me. Even now one could be climbing up a limb, looking for a warm spot he can slip in. Look at that moon, it's a beautiful sight. Don't share your body with a parasite. Let's get naked, it's a safe thing to do. You check me, I'll check you. For wood ticks.
On the phone with Larry Heagle, we're talking about his new book. By the time page 233 rolls around, we have a good idea of how much Larry Heagle has seen and done and all the fun he's had. But in August of 15 years ago, to make a long story short, you had a motorcycle accident, injuries from it. That began a period in your life that was 180 degrees different. Pain medication grabbed you. It held on tight. Without giving away the story, because we want people to read the book, can you Cliff's Notes it for us?
Well, it was just anybody that's experienced fentanyl. The doctor at the time didn't know that much about fentanyl, and he didn't really want to prescribe it. I kind of talked him into it. And I didn't know really what I was getting into. But in the book, it details what I got into. The reason I put that in the book is hopefully people will understand they shouldn't even go anywhere near that drug. It is worse than heroin. And the first 2 weeks I tried to get off it, and I want to give my wife, Kim Wilson, 1,000% of the credit. I would never have made it without her. It takes a long time to get through something like that, especially when you're on it as long as I was.
It's a very gripping part of the book. I'm glad it's in the book because it adds to the humanity of Larry Heagle. So thanks for putting that in the book. Thanks for being honest about it. Good for you. Here's a couple more tidbits. People are also unaware that Larry Heagle was way ahead of his time in fashion because today a blue suit and brown shoes are considered chic and trendy. But guess who started that trend, folks?
By forgetting his black shoes. He forgot his black shoes and he went on a comedy club tour with just brown shoes and a blue suit.
And now you see it all the time.
Yeah.
Here's another good thing for people to whet their appetites. Blinky and Little Bladder Man.
Yeah.
That, in my mind, could be a TV series, or at least a song. The book is called Not Really Sane, Not Really Sorry, Tales of an Itinerant Performer. Then there was the young lady, Larry, who said, boy, I'll bet you were really something in your day. And I say, what a day it's been. I mean, we're fortunate to have shared and continue to share days that include Larry Heagle's talent. Larry, thanks for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio and Spectrum West. It's been fun. It will continue to be fun. Thanks a lot.
I think I owe you the thanks very much.
Well, I went to see my doctor. I said, Doc, I can't pay my bills. Rent's all spent. My truck's got a dent. I think that I'm getting the chills from being forced to sleep alone. You know, this house just ain't a home. We can't afford no more kids. My life is on the skids because my woman says leave me alone. Unless you get a vasectomy, you gotta get a vasectomy. Just one little male alteration can save us from another altercation. Vasectomy, vasectomy. What a vas deferens there could be.
Oh, yeah, that's just a snip of the vasectomy song just for you guys. You know, in past weeks, we've been taking you home with songs designed to make us smile during a pandemic. But this week, given all the truly American activity on streets across the country the past week or so, well, here's one that might remind us that we all live in the same neighborhood, and maybe we should treat one another that way, don't you think?
Your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
I roamed and I rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. And all around me, a voice was singing. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me those golden valleys.
This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
As the sun was shining and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, a voice was saying, this land was made for you and me.
Everybody sing along.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream.
Wow. Hey, I heard you. Good job. Hey, you know, there's a network special Friday evening, so you won't be able to catch a repeat of Spectrum West then. But remember, you can go to WPR.org and find all the past programs there. They're listed by date and guests. Thanks a lot for being in the audience. We have a good show planned for you next week. Thanks to Dean, Kate, Catherine, and Jim. Live safe and smart. Let's get together again next week. See you then.